choice matters. We all know that. And this may not surprise you, but our brains like choice. It feels good to have a choice. It feels good to make one. And research has shown that we're more committed to outcomes when we've been given a choice. So that's what this episode is about. It's a story about how one company helped their people get through a pandemic that robbed them of their power to choose. It's also about saying thanks to a group of employees who braved the pandemic day in and day out so the world could eat. And it happened to General Mills, so we invited a special guest to come chat with us. I'm Gabriel Berezin, and you're listening to Your Brain at Work from the NeuroLeadership Institute. We continue to draw our episodes from a weekly webinar series that NLI has been hosting every Friday. This week, our panel consists of NLI's CEO and co-founder, Dr. David Rock, and Christina Morton, Vice President of Human Resources and Supply Chain at General Mills. Enjoy.
Christina, so great to be here with you. I really appreciated the collaboration and conversations we've had over quite a few years now. I remember we met in Switzerland at one point when you were heading up Europe and I was over there, and we've met a number of times and working with General Mills. I have to say, first of all, before I say anything about NLI, I have to say a big thank you for helping pretty much the entire planet get back to baking and for keeping those factories open under very difficult conditions, because you guys make so many important ingredients for literally cookies and bread and cakes and all that amazing baking that happened around the world would have kind of ground to a halt if you guys didn't keep the factories open. So thanks for everything that you did over that time. It must have been quite intense.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So for those of you new to NLI, I'm not going to say much, but we're actually quite old as a company now, 23 years officially, we've been doing this work, advising over 50 of the Fortune 100, very much global. And we partner with a number of firms like General Mills in every corner of the world. And that's something that we're really, really specialize in. But at the core of our work is research. And one of the things I say to organizations that work with us in any way is always start with the science, begin with the science. And in the last few years, I started saying, look, follow the science and then experiment and then follow the data. And it became a bit of a mantra. In fact, I think we're printing t-shirts with this at the moment. Follow the science, experiment, follow the data. And Christina and General Mills is one of the organizations that took that very much to heart. And actually, on learning about the SCARF model in particular and threat and reward and the different social domains that are made up in SCARF, actually has done a lot of work to not just educate the organization, but apply this into organizational systems. We talk a lot about priorities, habits, and systems. So General Mills done some really interesting work to bring some of our research into systems. And we met a few months ago and I heard about literally the experiment that they've done and all this data. I said, oh my gosh, lots of people would love to hear about this. It's really interesting data. So thanks very much, Christina, for making the time and being willing to share with us the outcome of this study. We'll describe it in a minute. Just for context, we wrote a paper way back in 2016, 5 years ago, called The Neuroscience of Total Rewards. And in this, we dug into how to think about total rewards beyond just financial rewards from a brain perspective. And there are a number of things that really stood out as we researched kind of the concept of designing reward systems. Notice the word systems, right? Reward systems. A number of things stood out. One of them is that rewards are not rewarding unless the brain kind of says this is rewarding. So you can give someone, you know, a big bonus and it can be rewarding or it can be upsetting. Actually, it depends on a number of factors. And we came to see that the SCARF framework of things like fairness and status and, you know, did I get a fair amount? Did I get more than people that I produce more than? And, you know, all this stuff really, really played in. The other thing that we saw was the enormous impact of autonomy in actually making a reward process powerful. And not just because people actually get to choose the reward that they want, although that's really important. We realized that there was actually 3 points at which the reward was activated in the brain. Like treating someone as an adult and giving them a choice, first of all, was very powerful. And we'll talk more about that. When they actually make the choice, it's rewarding. But then also when they participate in the choice, it feels closer to them as a construal issue. And it activates reward networks even more. Plus, they're more likely to choose something that is actually intrinsically rewarding to their whole personality profile. So there's all these reasons why giving people a lot more choice than we ever have around rewards is really powerful. And even though we're going to talk about rewards, I think this is hugely relevant to much more than just rewards. This is an example of one system where you can apply autonomy. And I thought I wanted to dive deeper into this study, and then we can kind of pull out and think about implications for other systems and all of this. But Christina, over to you. Do you want to tell us the story of kind of how it came about and what's going on? Tell us about the project.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, David. Like many of the things we've been talking about lately, you know, a year ago when the pandemic started, already it was the purpose at General Mills to make food the world loves. But with the pandemic, we actually started adding this "and needs" to the bottom of our purpose. So making food the world loves and needs, to your point about making sure that we had enough food being produced for people to be able to eat. And so in our manufacturing organization, we quickly realized we needed to keep people safe because we needed people to show up to make the food. Our office workers could certainly work from home, but in our manufacturing facilities, you still have to show up to make the food. And so we needed to make sure people were safe while also, by the way, making every case we could, because we knew that probably we were going to sell every case we could make for the foreseeable future. The team did some phenomenal work in getting some new safety protocol in place. I know all the food manufacturers were working on this and sharing best practices. We were learning new things almost every day. We were changing protocols, bringing new ones in almost every day. And the teams just did a terrific job of working through that while keeping the cases coming out the door, right? And getting those cases out into the grocery stores and on shelves for consumers. And it was really a point of time at 6 months in when we were able to participate in a benchmarking survey. And we were still realizing probably 400 absences per day, but our industry benchmarking showed us that our absence rate was half that of our industry average. And when we also benchmarked the close contact tracing per confirmed COVID case, we were averaging 0.5 and the industry average was 4. So some really incredible work. We realized that we were doing things really well, and we needed to stay on track with that and keep going and keep improving to make sure that we had those safety protocol in place. In the beginning of the pandemic, there was an outpouring of support and appreciation for our frontline, our teamwork, our workers and folks that were showing up at the plant every day. And the businesses were, we want to send t-shirts, we want to make bonuses. And we did, right? And we did send t-shirts and we did meals and food trucks and General Mills product, of course, and branded masks and grocery vouchers, right? We had to kind of pace it out a bit because we could see we were going to be in this for a while. But that really was the time when we came into that second wave of that October, November timing that we were sensing and seeing that people were tired. They were working schedules like they hadn't before, under conditions with all these safety protocols like never before. And we started to see this in our engagement data, and we knew we were adding run days into our schedule everywhere we could through holidays, et cetera. So we started to worry about the resilience of our teams. And so the HR team did some amazing work setting out to conduct fatigue assessments with every single one of our sites here in North America. We used qualitative and quantitative data, and we identified some of our higher risk plants and action plans to help close those gaps where we needed more staffing or resources, et cetera. But we also noticed that some sites were doing just fine, actually, and thriving even in the pandemic. So we dove in a little bit deeper to see what we could learn from those sites as well as we looked at building the action plans for the others. So we were in this kind of height of the pandemic and seeing higher absenteeism, starting to see some staffing shortages, supplementing with other parts of the organization to get through. We sat down with leadership to say, hey, here's the themes that we're seeing from this fatigue assessment. We need to talk about what we're going to do. And I just have to say, we have some phenomenal leaders at General Mills. I mean, really, really makes it a pleasure to work in human resources. The leaders of the company truly care about our people. They understand the importance of leadership and culture on performance and success. So it wasn't a hard sell to say we need to talk about this, right? They were quick to engage, but the ideas were, okay, well, let's just do another bonus, right? Let's do some more recognition. Let's give everybody a day off. Right. Let's just take all the plants down for a weekend. Can we just take a weekend and pick a weekend and take all the plants down and really, how can we show them how much we care about their well-being, that we hear, you know, them and that we appreciate them.
And the leaders generated these ideas. The leaders were coming up with this.
Yeah. Yep.
Can I just make a quick comment? You know, what I'm thinking about as you're talking about this is the three stages of the pandemic that we started talking about way back in March, which was shock, pain, and rehabilitation. And, you know, the shock was like 3 to 6 months maybe of just running on adrenaline. And then at some point, the pain kicked in. That's been going on all this time. We're still kind of in that. We're just moving into the rehabilitation phase. Like we're at the beginning of the beginning of the third phase of rehabilitation. And similar to when you like break a leg, you know, long period of pain and then eventually, you know, rehabilitation. And we're starting to get, so you were trying to help people through that long, dark tea time of the soul of pain in that way. But it's really interesting to hear the leaders actually generated a lot of these ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're really engaged. And we thought, wow, that would be bold, right? To take all of our plants down for a weekend, a long weekend, and give people some time off. But then also that would mean we wouldn't make those cases and we'd never be able to make that up, right? You miss the opportunity. And we were already not meeting our customers' expectations in terms of customer service and delivery. And then we also thought about, you know, fortunately, our manufacturing leaders and our HR team that leads this group, we've all worked in our manufacturing facilities. And so there's also the perspective of that person in your ear that's like, I don't want the weekend off. I don't want the company to choose when I have a weekend off, or, you know, I don't even have my kids this weekend, or I just want to make money, right? This is a great opportunity for me and I want to work their extra hours and be able to maximize my wealth through this period of time, right? This is the most overtime I've ever been able to take advantage of. Right. We often have this saying, I'm sure everybody who's working with employees, everyone in HR probably says this, but this common experience of no good deed goes unpunished. Right. And so when you try to do something, you have good intent, and inevitably there's someone who points out the error in your thinking and in your ways, right? And how it didn't work for them. And so why does this keep happening to us, right? And so we wanted to avoid that as well. And David, this is kind of where you and your team enter into the conversation, because you had just spoken in November at our top 100 leadership conference with our CEO and our top 100 leaders, and you focused on resilience and SCARF. And in SCARF, you really focused on unexpected autonomy. And we really reflected on like, okay, what is the, you know, what's going on for our folks if we think about it from that SCARF standpoint, right? And their status is falling, right? As we go through this difficult period and we've transitioned from a crisis management to a company running during a crisis, right? And operating during a crisis. And that certainty question, which was still haunting all of us of how long is this going to last? Autonomy for sure, where, you know, we did see an increase in what we call forced overtime. So, you know, the way the overtime rotates, usually we get more volunteers, but if no one volunteers, then some people get stuck with it, if you will, and forced overtime. The relatedness was impacted through the safety protocols, right? So you can't have lunch with your friends or be on break or chat with your buddies at work. It's so much more difficult with masks and 6 feet of distancing and, you know, everything else that we had in place to keep people safe ongoing. And then fairness as well. You know, there was a sense that in our manufacturing plants, you know, we added run days in over the 4th of July. We added run days in over Labor Day. We added run days in over Thanksgiving. And then we were adding run days in between Christmas holiday and the New Year's holidays that, you know, were meaning that more people were having to work those holidays and the office workers who are working from home didn't have to do that stuff. Right.
I'm asking a lot of people, and there's some unfairness because the people in the factories are taking a greater risk before they even get to the factory just by being in public or public transport or driving. So there's a real gap between the people who have to be in public and not. We were talking about that a lot for the last year. So you've really got the jackpot of kind of negative SCARF on all five domains are being attacked through the pandemic for a lot of people, particularly those in factories. Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so the team had an amazing idea. They thought about that. And I have to tell you, it wasn't easy to implement, but I was so proud. Our internal COEs, everybody who had to pull together to make it happen, they just jumped right in, right? They didn't question. They were like, yes, this is what we need to do. And so being able to just make that possible because there was that kind of shared empathy and enthusiasm for our frontline workers at General Mills to try to make life a little bit better for them, right? Or a lot of it better if we could, but better in any way that we could. You know, really there was the opportunity to give the gift of choice is what we called it. And giving folks the opportunity to choose between a bonus some time off, a day off, or to make a donation to a charity of their choice. And I'll tell you, it was very clear we were going to do either day or dollars. And it was really a leader on my team, Renee, who was like, we need three things. We need three things, Christina. And I'm like, okay, well, what could the third thing be? And one of our strategies at General Mills is to be a force for good. And so, you know, we've got a great culture of both contributions and volunteering in the community, in addition to the work that the company does and leads. But to add that element of donation, to be able to acknowledge that even if, you know, our frontline folks are working their tails off, they do have families, friends, and neighbors who are struggling. And we know that, you know, the number of people that, you know, are suffering from food scarcity in this country is much more significant than we'd like it to be. And so the option to add the donation was probably the trickiest one for us to figure out how to make that work. But I think it was really worth it to have three things for folks to choose from. We had some hypotheses going into this, right? So as you mentioned, David, it was a bit of an experiment for us. And we had a hypothesis. I was personally in the 70 to 75%, I thought, would take a day off. So given what we'd seen on the fatigue assessments and the very beginning of the calendar year, so that's where we could add that day into their vacation bank and make that available and give people a little breathing room on their time off. So I thought it'd be more like 70, 75% and was surprised that it came in at 59% who chose the day off, 39% with the bonus. And then 2%, so over 150 is almost 200 people chose to donate their bonus to charity, which was really cool. I also thought, had my hypothesis, I thought more women would choose to take the day off than men, just given, you know, some of the things that we know about women being primary caregivers and families, et cetera. And I was wrong. More men chose the day off slightly. It was almost exactly the same.
Right.
I also thought, I had a hypothesis that more employees who had less than 5 years would take the day off over the bonus or the donation. And I was wrong on that as well. So more people who had more than 5 years, they chose time off than the less than 5 years. But the nuance of that is I also guessed that more employees at our union sites would choose the time off because here we have more seniority rules in place and things versus rotating work schedules and time off and overtime. And in that case, we did see the more junior people taking more time off, as well as in our union plants, we saw more people choosing to take the time off. So those were some of my hypotheses, and I didn't get very many of them right, which just goes to show you, we got to let the people make their own choices, right? The employees to make their own choice about what's valuable to them.
I'm just thinking about if you'd gone with 75% and given 75% of people the day off, you would have missed about 1,500 people. Like you would have given them the wrong thing, right?
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's really hard to guess, whereas giving them the choice, amazing. Someone was asking about like, how did people receive the video, what was their feelings? And you've got the data here, there was high engagement. So 85% of employees took the survey to make the choice. So
that's right, which was huge for us. So we had an element in there. If you didn't make a choice, then you got the bonus. But 85% took the survey. We had previously experienced more in the 35% participation in surveys, et cetera, that we'd done via email. So for 85% to engage, that was huge. And we really we made it a light touch with a video and an email from the plant manager, and that was posted that up a couple of places around the plant. So really word of mouth really got going on that for folks. And so there's a lot of buzz. I'll show you some quotes actually.
Yeah, let's go to the next slide. I think the quotes are great. And then we can talk a little bit about the science.
So it was really positive. It was palpable. Like people were debating which you're going to choose and why and having those discussions. And it was great to just have people debate and discuss something that wasn't maybe so contentious, like what's going on in the rest of our world in that same time frame. And so having this as a kind of fun distraction, energy giving discussion about what option they'll take, and also how important it was for folks to have that choice of the day off. We've not done anything like that before, you know, to just randomly give folks an extra day off. You know, we had to go through our unions and in our union sites to see if it was okay to give folks that choice, right? Because the union is who gets to decide on behalf of the employees. And all of our unions signed up to say, yes, this is really cool. We see the value in it easily, and we want to have the workforce here participate in that. And I love this last quote, which is just, you know, I think people were a little bit in shock that it was that wonderful surprise, and the appreciation was really strong. So it was overall a couple weeks, you know, while people were making their choices, it was kind of the talk of the town.
Your Brain at Work isn't just a podcast. It's the most important meal of the day. For your brain, anyway. If you're someone who likes a steady diet of the science-business combo, you can devour article after article on a full menu of topics. Culture change, diversity, inclusion, equity, learning, and more. Each one is sure to serve you with a fresh, science-based perspective on some of the oldest challenges facing leaders and organizations. To visit the Your Brain at Work blog, visit neuroleadership.com/blog.
I want to address that final point that, like, I'm still in shock. You know, it's a quite a big statement. And I think that I really appreciate and applaud you guys following the science of this, because we've always said with rewards and threats, right? Everything's a threat or reward, that the really strong ones are unexpected. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic was very unexpected, right? We were all in overwhelm for many, many, many weeks and months. If we have another one, it's going to be much less overwhelming because it's going to be much more expected. We know what to expect, right? So it'll be a whole different experience, you know, having another one of these in, you know, 5 years or 10 years, those who've lived through this one. And the same thing with rewards. So when you're expecting something to happen, like, well, I'm getting this bonus, it's not particularly rewarding. But when an unexpected reward happens, it really gets your attention. And there's been a whole lot of research on this around rewards. And they find that, like, a bonus, for example, is not actually intrinsically rewarding unless it's actually more than you expected or more than other people, that, like, literally you're comparing yourself to other people. Or the other thing is, you know, deeply fair, like righting a wrong in some way. Like, this is one of those three things. A bonus doesn't tend to have much intrinsic reward value in terms of activation of the reward networks of the brain, whereas something unexpected has a really big, big, big hit. And you can see that in people's quotes. But let's bring alive what I said before about the three points of reward. So the first thing is, when people have been told that they've actually got this 3D choice, firstly, at that moment, they would have been like, wow, that's really brilliant. I feel really respected, appreciated, treated like an adult, and, you know, given choice. You know, when we're given choice that we didn't think we have, it's very intrinsically rewarding in any domain. So that at that point, and you heard that from some people. The second point is when they actually take the reward. So when they receive the money or they take the day off, like, at that point, it would be very rewarding because they'd chosen it. And there's research on this, that when you choose something, you actually value it much higher than when you're just kind of given it. So if you've got two tubs of ice cream, you choose one, you know, you choose one, you actually enjoy it more because you've chosen it. It activates a toward response in the brain, a reward response through the act of choosing. Then you've got the fact that the reward is actually the thing that you want the most. So, you know, you've chosen the money because you actually want the money. Or you've chosen the day off because you really want the day off. And so you're enjoying it. And then even reflecting back, it's really four points. Reflecting back on the whole experience is more reward. So the difference between just, you know, giving everyone a day off, which would have annoyed a bunch of people, giving everyone money, which also would have annoyed a bunch of people, is that now you've actually got reward for a considerable amount of time and for a large amount. So there's a lot of research behind this. Any questions coming up that you want to address?
I think I saw one comment that, you know, $250 isn't super generous. I agree. And we had given much more generous bonuses previously in the pandemic. And we were getting into a point where, because of all of the additional capacity we were bringing on and every case was getting more expensive, we did not have as big of a budget to go after this. And so the choice really was the part that I think people were shocked about, not the amount of the award at all. That wasn't anything that shocked folks.
And that's an interesting point, actually, is that you actually need less actual reward to get a bigger tonnage. And this is what we wrote about in the Neuroscience of Total Rewards, is that you actually can really maximize the value you have. I mean, the number, when you add it up, you know, still in the millions, you know, so it actually adds up. And then when you add up the time off as well, that actually adds up tremendously in all sorts of ways. That adds up to probably much bigger than the millions of cash. So, but you're getting a huge return for that money as well, which I think is really interesting. But I think it's the act of giving people the choice was innately, yeah, intrinsically rewarding in many, many ways.
Yeah. And that's what we did want, some element of surprise, right? Some element, I mean, honestly, you should see the, if I could like curate and pull together all of the appreciation notes. And we were sending weekly notes out to the plants with, you know, PowerPoint slides and thank yous from all sorts of leaders, from the consumers, quotes from them. We were sending out tons of communication. All of our plant managers made a, you know, TikTok video, you know, kind of passing right. the product around. And I mean, the team thought about every which way that they could say thank you. And we wanted to find another unique way to say thank you. And that's where the choice came in.
Yeah. And someone was asking, is this similar to why forcing people into, say, a diversity program doesn't tend to work? And in fact, that's exactly the issue. We wrote a big piece in Strategy and Business called, "Is Your Diversity Program Making Your Company More Biased?" And it turns out when you take away the autonomy and say, you have to do this training program, people actually dig their heels in. It's not that they don't just appreciate it. They actually fight now and actually may become more biased. And there's some pretty good research that mandatory DEI programs can actually do some harm, whereas giving people the choice is really, really different. And that's we've done quite a bit of research in that. And something else here I think it's important is, you know, was it difficult, Christina, to get the leaders on board with this, or were they driving it? You guys were kind of steering it, or what was the experience with kind of getting this executed? And I know you did it really quickly too. How was that for you?
Yeah, we did go quickly. The leaders, I'd say, of the company overall, and for sure our manufacturing leaders, were eager to do something. And I think it's easy for all of us to fall into a bit of a paternalistic, like, we know what's best. People are saying they're tired, let's give them time off. But thankfully, we also have really thoughtful leaders who are willing to discuss and debate what Right. some different options and opportunities could be for us. And that was your inspiration and talk was excellent timing for us to tee up this kind of an option in terms of unexpected autonomy. So they got to hear that directly from you. And then we could bring that back up in discussion without having to describe what that was. And this guy named Dr. Rock said, and blah, blah, blah.
You had some momentum there. Someone was asking about the number of choices, and three is actually a helpful number to think of. And the reason it's helpful is two is not really a choice. It's like, you know, A or B. It doesn't feel like a choice. Whereas three, you can hold three variables in mind. Unless they're really complicated each, you actually can hold three variables in mind reasonably well and compare and contrast them in our working memory. When you try to hold four things in mind and compare and contrast them, it actually starts to fall off the cliff of literally the resources we have for our working memory. And so it's hard to actually compare and contrast them. And once you get to five, it's like almost impossible. So you can imagine three different scenarios and pick between them. It actually feels like you've been given a choice. Too many, and it actually is overwhelming. And there's quite a lot of research on that. Sheena Iyengar wrote a book on that, The Power of Choice. We had her at one of our summits some years back. But three is a good rule of thumb, just from working memory capacity. Do you want to go, Christina, to some of the data, some of the lessons learned?
Yeah, certainly. And we've talked about some of it for sure, and that, you know, it really was the choice that was seen as a reward in itself. And having that option. And so that was definitely really exciting to see, knowing that, you know, that one solution doesn't fit for everybody. And you can't know everybody's personal situation to know what's going to fuel their own individual well-being or goals or, you know, whatever, especially as you're talking about money or time or motivation. So definitely having that and thinking about it from that standpoint, that proved out to be true. I mentioned that, you know, our unions embraced it as well, and very easily and quickly. And it really stood out. So there were lots of companies who were, you know, and you know, people who we compete for talent with in the different markets that were doing bonuses. And, you know, we were doing bonuses. This definitely was not the first one we did. And the option here of the choice was, again, just the part that was a bit the shock and the difference and the opportunity in what we saw. I also, so some new news, we just finished up an engagement survey. So I'd mentioned to you that our engagement results back in September, we'd seen some dips and some of the fatigue showing up there. And we just finished an engagement survey last Friday. And I just got some of the raw data here this morning. And, you know, versus last year, we're seeing, you know, statistically significant increases in our engagement among this population. And some of the important questions about proud to work for General Mills and a great place to work and feeling valued as an employee and +4 and +5%. But on some of the ones from that pulse survey we did back in September, about communicating authentically and openly and the company caring about my well-being, we saw +8% and +9% for this population. So we're really encouraged, you know, and by this was not the only thing we did, right? So we had those fatigue assessments. We launched 9 sprints, you know, plus this, you know, we were doing a lot of work on communication. Our total rewards team completely revamped our well-being resources for January, as many companies have been doing, and as many great options have come available. And so there've been a lot. I mean, we've hosted vaccine events at almost all of our sites in North America or in the US by, you know, the end of this month. And so, you know, we've got a lot of other things going on as well related to well-being, but nonetheless, that was the message we were trying to get through here is choose something that's good for you, right? And choose something that's good for your well-being. So we're really encouraged with how we're seeing this show up in our engagement results as well.
No, that's great. You know, how did employees' families respond to community? Was this a topic? Did it, you know, was it talked about?
You know, I don't have any intel on that. So I would guess, pretty positively in that there was some buzz that folks were able to take home and to talk about with their friends and with their family. So we haven't checked their Facebook pages or anything for...
Yeah, there's an AI to do that, but it's a little bit of time. And what was, can you say more about the fatigue survey? Some people are asking about what you can share more about that, the pre and post and how you did that and what some of the questions were.
We were able to take a look at a few things. And so the team had pulled together some of the aspects that we knew were important. And so we had that recent engagement pulse survey. So, you know, taking a look at that, but we were also able to take a look at, you know, some of the practices, staffing practices in any given site, especially around, you know, where we were seeing more forced overtime, for example, overtime hours. For us, we have to take a look at it on a year over year basis, because we do have a good amount of seasonality in our business. So taking a look year over year, you know, are we seeing higher levels of overtime worked, higher levels where overtime is getting to the point of being forced, et cetera. Same with staffing, percent open jobs, for example. And then also looking at the business aspects of it. So added run days, some changes. So you might imagine some of our businesses had an increase in production. Some of our business actually had a decrease in production in our food service business or our Nature Valley snack bars, for example, where people weren't on the go as much. And so we actually pulled some of that production in from external manufacturing, but that meant more changeovers, and more changeovers can lead to more fatigue, you know, types of things. So that was some of the things we were looking for and trying to identify of what were those stress factors that could be coming in and with those teams.
Of the different things of the charity issue, like were people told which charity to give to, or are they given choices? How many choices were they given in the charity? Like, was it pre-selected, or how did you do the charity choice?
As a company, we already offer a match for employees in any given year up to a certain amount that they would donate to charity. And we've got a site that we use where people can designate and make those donations. So as long as it's a 501c3, I think is the designation, we would make that donation on their behalf.
Great. Yeah. And can you speak a little bit to how this kind of approach, you know, giving choice can be really impactful for blue collar or factory workers? Like, how is it even more relevant to them? Can you speak more to that? I know you addressed it a little bit, but can you say a little bit more about it?
Yeah. You know, for our folks, they didn't really have a choice whether to show up to work or not. Right. And already, you know, the level of flexibility. So throughout the entire pandemic, we've had 3 themes that we've been focused on from HR, from an employee support standpoint: care, flexibility, and prioritization of work. And so if we're, you know, keep working on those 3 things, care, making sure people are taken care of, flexibility, you know, in whatever way we can give, and prioritization of work, making sure the most important things are clear and can get done. And the flexibility piece is much more difficult for folks where we need to cover every shift. We need a certain number of people to cover every shift. And some of our plants have been able to do a terrific job of really amping up where we allow shift swaps, where we allow people, you know, to be doing trading and reorganizing work for their schedules. Because these folks who are showing up at the plant every day, they also have kids that were not in school. They also have family members who they might need to take care of. And they didn't have that same flexibility as a lot of our folks who could work from home did. And so those would be some of the restrictions in terms of, you know, where they have less autonomy overall, especially on their own time, right? Their own schedule and if you're the most junior person and no one else wants to work on Saturday, you might have to be the one who shows up on Saturday. And it only takes one person to not show up for us to not to be able to run production.
And I think we mentioned this before, but I think that as they compare themselves to the, you know, folks in the office who you know, don't have to leave their home at all and can maybe go and live with their parents and can go and live in a ski field for a month or do whatever, like it can really start to look unfair. You know, this was specifically for the factory workers. And I think it's, you know, it's a powerful thing. Let's broaden it a little bit. First of all, what are you thinking of next in terms of applying this principle? So the principle is giving people unexpected choice versus kind of defining what they get, not just for rewards, like across the whole spectrum of talent resources, right? Yeah. What are you thinking about doing next in terms of some of the systems that you have there?
You know, we've got a couple areas where we're looking to do some focused improvement, if you will, where we know we have an opportunity to be stronger and to be better. And, you know, I'm interested to know if others have used autonomy or choice in these spaces. So one of them is recognition, and especially peer recognition and creating that culture of recognition. So not just your manager recognizing you, but, you know, recognizing each other. The second is retention. And so I'm sure I'm not alone in struggling with retention. And for us, we struggle the most with our 0 to 12 month hires in our production teams. And so this is a space where we're also thinking about maybe relatedness as an opportunity to build more of a cohort status and relationship with each other and, you know, with the rest of the organization. But trying to figure out both, I'd say, recognition and retention.
Right.
Are there opportunities for us to leverage autonomy, unexpected autonomy, or other aspects of SCARF for us to improve?
Right. Yeah. Recognition is kind of an obvious one, isn't it? Giving people more choice over the rewards. And I wrote about that a little bit in that paper that you could also tweak your rewards based on people's SCARF profile. So if you knew that someone had relatedness as a really big profile, you're much less likely to just give them a cash bonus and more likely to do something that has them connect with other people. So you would serve up different kinds of rewards based on people's SCARF profiles. You still give them choice, still give them the autonomy, but you might give them a different three to choose from if you knew someone had relatedness versus someone had autonomy, it's, you know, itself. So that's an area. One thing that we saw is obviously with the pandemic, people were given more choice over where they worked. To some degree, they couldn't work at the office, so it meant they had some choice over where they were. But a really big variable, and I think we talked about this last week, is giving people more choice over when they work as well. And in any way you can give them even a tiny bit of unexpected reward over when they work, even if it's only 10% of their hours, it can make a huge difference. So you might say, hey, look, this is harder with factory workers, obviously, but there's still an element of it. But try to give unexpected rewards over when people work and give them a little bit more control. That's a very powerful one. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, even the most positive change tends to get about 20 to 25% of people actively fighting it. And this is the no good deed goes unpunished principle, right? It's really hard to fight against being given a choice of different things, you know, three good things. You probably will get some people who are annoyed. But I guess that's a question for you, Christina. Was anyone annoyed by this? Did you get punished for doing this by anyone that you heard of?
I'm sure there was person or two, right? It didn't make it to my inbox if it was,
right.
But I have to imagine, right? There's somebody who could could be disappointed or frustrated about something.
For sure. But I think you can really take this apart. Let's think about performance management, for example, like the goal cycle. You know, should everyone be on the same goal cycle? Should some people be on a goal cycle that's a month or 3 months or 6 months, you know, depending on. So, you know, should there be some flexibility in the goal cycle that you work with? Should there be some flexibility of how you debrief? You know, do you always have to debrief with your manager, or would, you know, should be able to invite other people to debrief, to broaden and provide more input and reduce biases in there as well? So if you kind of think about all the different points, say on the performance cycle, from setting goals to doing check-ins to even end of year, there's actually some unexpected autonomy could be woven in there, which could be very, very powerful. Certainly you think about learning and development. There's some improvements in the broad space around that for sure, but, you know, with more kind of pathways and self-driven work. But I think it's also overwhelmed. So there's also like 1,000 courses you can do versus, look, here are three pathways and you know, let's help you choose one. So I think we've gone overboard with the autonomy in the online learning space a little bit, thrown out certainty, gone too far. Whereas giving people some clear pathways and kind of choose a learning pathway and maybe choose three would be fantastic. it is possible to give people too many choices. And some people, if they have certainty as a high function, are going to want a lot of certainty. They don't want as much autonomy. Other people, generally more senior, tend to like a lot more autonomy. Generally, and it's not a fixed thing, but generally the higher you go in an organization, the more people want autonomy. So if you're talking about functional leaders or regional leaders or country managers, this kind of thing, you're going to want to weave autonomy in as, you know, much as possible, because it will actually be one of their strong scarf drivers. Christina, anything that you want to share in terms of the sort of big lessons learned? And from your perspective, you know, you followed the science, you experimented, you followed the data. What's the biggest insight for you out of the whole process?
You know, I think there's a piece of the power of choice. I really like what I learned today from you about three is a choice. I'm like, right. that is really powerful. I got to remember that. And credit to Renee and my team for seeing that opportunity as well. And I think that the other piece is, you know, one of the things that we're constantly thinking about is, you know, how do we accelerate possibilities? So I think a year ago, 2 years ago, we would have said, oh, we just can't do that, right? Just too hard, too complicated, too something, right? And I think that the idea, in fact, we did it, and we were scrappy in terms of how we did the survey and how we pulled things together, but just about anything's possible. And if you can follow the science, you have more confidence that your experiment is going to have elements of success and elements of learning that you can build upon. And so I think for us, being able to accelerate possibilities is another piece that we're proud of and we're glad that we pushed on.
You know, the big insight for me is that choice is intrinsically and power or unexpected choice is intrinsically and powerfully rewarding as long as it's the right amount of choice. So not an overwhelming amount. So the right amount of unexpected choice is intrinsically and unexpectedly rewarding and powerful. And I know you really helped 10,000 people and no doubt their families and others in a small but actually meaningful way, in ways that showed up in your engagement figures. So hats off to you. I look forward to watching the next experiment that you do. I'm sure we'll have some conversations about some fun experiments. Maybe it'll be learning, maybe it'll be performance, could be anywhere. Christina, just a huge thank you for the collaboration, the partnership, and being willing to jump into this and share the data and share the story.
Your Brain at Work is produced by the NeuroLeadership Institute. You can help us in making organizations more human by rating, reviewing, and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Our producers are Cliff David, Matt Holodak, and Danielle Kirschenblatt. Our executive producer is me, Gabriel Berezin. Original music is by Grant Zubritsky, and logo design is by Ketch Ware. We'll see you next time.